Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Ron and Don Show on Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Ron and Don Show. I'm Don Allen in Studio A, and Mr. Ronald A. Edwards is over in Studio B. Good morning, Mr. Edwards. How are you?
Can't complain, Don. Looks like we're having some technical problems here, but I'm getting straightened out. What's up? What do you got?
Well, let James Brown play for a little bit extra long. We'd like to welcome everybody who's watching via Facebook Live, the audio version, or the audio part of this. Our calling number is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. It's myself, Don Allen, with Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Yeah, a lot going on this week, Mr. Edwards. We got notification, I guess it was Thursday, that the Minneapolis Urban League might have been a little bit of a place of confrontation. And, I mean, I was not there, but I did read a lot of the posts on social media about what was going on. And I mean, I don't have that much details other than I understand that the president of the Minneapolis Urban League, Mr. Belton, put some people out doing a congressperson Ilhan Omar event there. And I don't know, did you have any insight on that?
Yeah, I got some insight on it. I mean, that it's been posted all over the free world, you know. You know, maybe somebody that was there personally would want to talk about it. Understand there was competition between him and a man, Mel Reed, theoretically right for the Minnesota Motion Recorder. But, you know, everybody kind of has been talking about it. I guess the Urban League wants to kind of low-key and defuse the situation, you know. But I'm interested to see if anybody, you know, from the Omar camp, Somalis, Palestinians, Jews, and etc. will step up, you know. At this point, that's my decision at this particular moment in light of the circumstances and conditions. But, yeah, there was a conversation.
Yeah, yeah. So we had a couple guys posted that the food was thrown out and that Mr. Belton acted, or President Belton acted extremely unprofessional, and I did try to call him, Mr. Edwards, at the Minneapolis Urban League and left several messages with his executive secretary, and none of them were answered.
Let me say this, Don. So for all the people out there that are trying to make Steve Belton the bad guy in this situation, and I did, we would have already somebody calling in. They'd be still sleeping. It rained all last night here in Minnesota. Of course, that makes the river flood levels up. But Steve Belton has issued a press release, which is available to the folks that have computers and et cetera, in which he explained what happened and the reason. And it had to do with disrespect of the Urban League, disrespect of the wishes of his administration as it pertains to a political event that apparently wasn't properly authorized by the Urban League of Minneapolis. And consequently, Mr. Reed took an action of defiance, if you will, and attempted to hold the political meeting in the parking lot of property owned by the Urban League of Minneapolis. And, of course, that was insulting and disrespectful. Mr. Belton, there were harsh words. Mr. Belton, you know, who basically seems to be a fairly passive individual, did not back down. He ordered the people off of his property, if you will. This was a meeting, I think we already know that. I think you already have it there. This is a meeting to talk in terms of the right of freedom of speech of Representative Omar, if you will. But, you know, there was a question on if you wanted to have a meeting, they should have it at Omar's new congressional headquarters, which is in South Minneapolis in the Stewart neighborhood. So, you know, people know that. And so there is a statement by the president of the Urban League, and it's not very flattering to the forces of the congresswoman for the congressional district. So that's what happened, man. So what else we got?
Oh, well, moving right along, you know, there was, speaking of Steve Belton of the Minneapolis Urban League, there was some testimony given earlier this week, April 3rd, in front of the House of Representatives, the Democrats. And I think last week we played the testimony that was given in front of the GOP, the Republican Senate. And they're kind of flip-flopped, totally opposite. And we do have them queued up, ready to play. And we just like people to hear this, and we'll figure out what's going on. And the first one, if you don't mind, Mr. Edwards, I want to play. The first one is the House of Representatives. I think it's the Workforce Training Entrepreneurship Investment to help close opportunity gaps for Minnesotans of color, where you had Mike Wynn, Gary Cunningham, and a bunch of other folks there testifying in front of the Republicans. And here is the Minneapolis Urban League president's testimony.
Thank you. And I see some activity up there. So thank you, Senator Champion, for making sure all our testifiers sign in and helping out our committee assistants. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and feel free to begin when you're ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Stephen Belton, President and Chief Executive of the Minneapolis Urban League. Also in transition, we are soon to be the Urban League Twin Cities. From July of 2016 to March of 2018, our equity-funded programs produced the following results. Over 1,800 individuals were served by the four organizations that were represented in the collaborative. 256 became enrolled in GED programs. 1,007 received pre-employment skills. Which is key to the population that we work with. We work with people who are not only discouraged workers, but often are people who are distrustful workers and have become disdainful of the employment system because of long-term unemployment, because of long-term neglect and disinvestment in our communities. And so given this population that we're working with, which is the hardest to employ and most unemployed in the state, it's important to provide pre-employment, what often called job readiness services for these groups. 341 achieved an industry-recognized workforce credential. 476 obtained job placement at an average wage of $12.65. 58 of our workers received training, transitional employment, and earnings for a total of $336,000. In paid wages. And overall, for combining all of our programs, our projection is that it was $8.7 million in annual wages that were paid as a result of our training and placement efforts.
Okay, Mr. Edwards, that was him saying that in direct connection to the Minneapolis Urban League's training and efforts and job placement efforts, that it created $8.6 million in wages from that 2016 to that 2017 time frame.
Now, that was a Senate testimony.
This was a Senate testimony.
So what did you play first? Was that the House or the Senate?
No, I played the Senate first. That was a Senate testimony. The Republican, Minnesota Senate Republican Caucus.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the next one here is the House of Representatives. It's the House Job and Economic Development Finance Division. And let's go ahead and play this and see if we see any differences.
Thank you for accepting one more. I'm Stephen Belton. I'm Chief Executive Officer of Urban League Twin Cities, formerly known as Minneapolis Urban League. I'll be brief and to the point. I want to object vigorously, strenuously to the underlying parts of this bill which would gut the equity appropriations. I would remind you that in 2016 we had the worst disparities in the nation. They have not changed. And so my concern is that the strategy that was put in place, the revenues that were allocated to address these deep and concerning disparities that have not changed, are that you're essentially abandoning that process in favor of making a grant to deed for competitive, so that these nonprofits that are on the ground doing the work would have to compete for this. This is the equivalent, from our perspective, of putting the fox in charge of the chickens. Our relationship with deed has been fraught, has not been productive, and the underlying idea that there's an accountability issue or there should be some inherent distrust of community organizations is simply misplaced. Your distrust in questions about accountability should be addressed at deed, not at the organizations that are doing this work. Minneapolis Urban League, Urban League Twin Cities, as part of the collaborative with Emerge, we have done effective work. We have been doing effective work for a long time, work that you should be proud of, that the taxpayers of Minnesota should be pleased about. We were actually making progress, and now you are looking at gutting that and making us compete against each other at the discretion of Dean, and it is simply a misplaced strategy. I would also say that I want to call out the hypocrisy in this bill. You have this idea that you cannot trust, and therefore you should not fund directly nonprofit organizations, but rather create this intermediary relationship with D. And yet the hypocrisy is that you are funding some same privilege, the same strategy, the same trust that you're doing with those nonprofits should come to us as well. So I've got an entire minute left. I'm going to leave that minute for you to ponder these remarks. I know most people have been polite and have not been blunt. I don't mean to be impolite. I am not impolite. I'm simply calling out the issue that is the 500-pound gorilla in the room that we're dealing with. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. What I will say is that you may call it hypocrisy. You can call it anything you want.
I call it hypocrisy.
I was respectful of you. Understand that this committee, this bill, doubles the amount of money for organizations like yourself in that grant program. Doubles the amount of money that has ever been put into that particular program.
So, Mr. Edwards. That was Steve Belton's president of the Urban League, Minneapolis Urban League.
And who was the chairman that he was talking to?
I don't know. I did not get his name. I will find out. He was the chair of the House of Representatives, omnibus.
Democrat.
And I see a sharp contrast in these two videos. In one video, in front of the Republicans, it seems like they were touting and lauding their accomplishments, over the past couple of years with this equity funding. And in front of the Democrats, it looked like they were begging for money. And we know already, Mr. Edwards, that it's problematic for any money to go to Deed, because Deed is notorious for ripping off proposals from the Black community and other communities of color and turning them back out in RFPs and not giving the people who wrote the proposals, you know, their agencies a dime. So I can
now,
agree.
While we do this for our international audience, Don, what and who is Deed? So, I mean, you know, if you're not living in Minnesota or even close.
Oh, okay. Deed is the Department of Employment and Economic Development for the state. They jobs and economic development come out of there. A lot of funding across the board from the state comes out of there to many nonprofits, to many foundations and charitable organizations that are on a mission to make things better in this state. Again, that's the Department of Employment and Economic Development here in Minnesota. That's what we call it, Deed, and it might be Deed in other places, but definitely Deed here. And it's very interesting, Mr. Edwards, because I had a chance to listen to a conversation of someone calling the state yesterday on this housing RFP that came out. And the only way to submit it is electronic. And the person asked, well, I wonder if we don't have a computer and we just want to type it up, or we don't have internet, we want to type it up and bring it over to you, you know, how many copies you need. And the lady on the phone, whose name was on the bottom of the RFP that went out, says, you know what? I'm going to have to check and see if that was okay. If you can type it up and bring it in, copy it, and bring us in 5 copies, which it has to be okay, because not everyone has that acumen to go to this database and fill out all this information and give it to Dee. So, I'm in full agreement with Mr. Belton about the Deed and giving money to Deed, contrary to what Al Flowers posted on this link about, you know, that we're going after the Urban League. But then again, if you look back over the years,
I'm a little confused on that. Alfred Flowers, who is a community activist and was one of the architects, as I understand it, of a piece of legislation which got gutted, $2 million. Directed to the Urban League. We talked about that a couple of weeks ago. That $2 million piece was gutted when Representative, and maybe, you know, you don't want to mention his name. Maybe that's where we're kind of floating away from that, but let's get back to it. Well, Representative Ray Dean, Abe Slater, represents a heavily African-American legislative house district, maintained that he lost their proposal, and there's been some back and forth. We want to be study group or whatever you want to call them. So we need to be honest and upfront that there is some skullduggery from our quote-unquote Democratic, you know, daddies, if you will. And Mr. Belton and the Urban League did get wiped out of a $2 million legislative package. Of course, there was another group, African Americans, that allegedly got wiped out. And we went over that on these programs a couple of Saturday mornings ago. The House files in the Senate, we already did that. If someone calls in and asks a question about it, certainly we have it in place. But we need to be upfront with our listening audience around the world is that there is this hostility. In fact, some of it probably led to the confrontation that you talked about at the beginning of this show, where Democratic office holders were basically told that they weren't particularly welcome at the Urban League, even though Mr. Belton had found a different venue for them to go have their meeting, if you will. So we need to just, you know, be absolutely as transparent as possible. By the way, on the issue of transparency, I just want to give you a heads up that at the top of the hour, I intend to go with a story that has been under investigation by 19 of a African American who was paroled by the federal system, brought into Minnesota, recharged, and sentenced to life in prison once again, Ralph Lukey Duke. And I've been shocked by the number of so-called liberals in this state that have turned their heads, their eyes. So I'm just indicating that to you now that we're going to talk about Pookie Duke, Ralph Pookie Duke, and the fact that he was stripped of his pardon by a very biased federal judge who I will name at the top of the program. But back to Belton and the Democrats and what happened. Well, how did you read, you know, what President Belton was saying? I mean, is there some friction amongst the Democrats and some aspects of the African-American political structure?
I'm absolutely sure there's some friction because, you know, it's really interesting, you know, and it's a slippery slope because I find it highly irregular that you would kick out or remove people from the Urban League for a political event on Wednesday night. And today at 3 p.m., the Minneapolis Urban League is the building where they're having the 2019 Republican Liberty Caucus of Minnesota State Convention.
Yep. It's interesting. It needs an explanation, hopefully.
Yeah.
Phone numbers, I guess the 347-426-3904 number is working. You know, maybe a couple people in the remaining, we have about 45 minutes. Call in and clarify for us. That's what this program is about. But go ahead. Finishing up the testimony, that's kind of what you played here.
Yeah.
The kind of inconsistency, but at the same time, the apparent heartbreak between a Democratic institution and the Democratic Party. I mean, wow, one would never have thought that would have happened. What else do you feel that's happening on this?
Well, I just think that, you know, the people, the Democrats, especially at the state legislature, know that this money keeps, how can I say this? That keeps the cows in the gate. You know, they won't run out and won't come back. And it's kind of a
more like the sheep.
The sheep, yeah. I say cows because people are bigger.
Sheep. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
You know, we end up with sheep, black sheep. But go ahead.
Yeah, they keep the black sheep in the gate. And it's really funny because the difference, there's a huge contrast because when Mr. Belton was talking to Republicans, it was like, hey, this is all the stuff we did. This is what we do. This is what happens, et cetera, et cetera. But when Belton, obviously leaning to the right, to the left, a liberal, goes in front of the DFL caucus there, the jobs committee, the omnibus bill they're talking about there, he's literally begging them not to give money to Deed to fund the Urban League directly. Now, we have to understand what process led the Urban League to even do that, to even
to even get cut out of funding, because I don't think the Urban League has gotten a major dollar from the state legislature since Bobby Joe Champion, Senator Bobby Joe Champion and Jeff Hayden signed off on an estimated $600,000 in 2015, I think it was, for the 13th grade program, which never came to fruition in the Urban League. They were saying, oh, our kids need another year of school, so we're going to start this 13th grade. And then come to find out, Mr. Edwards, that that particular proposal and program was written by someone that – it wasn't written by the people that they said that authored it. And inside of the Urban League. But it was still taken and pushed to the max to get that money in. Now, I don't know. I haven't seen any hard copies or documentation about the Urban League, but we know that the Urban League has had a significant downplay in their programs and in their funding. We can look back at 2008 and 2009 where the United Way cut $500,000 but left them with $500,000 because there was some questionable – one of the things was some questionable participants.
Let's be fair, though, on that one, because I assume we have Urban League supporters out there listening, and so we don't want to be unfairly attacked. But that was not under the administration of one Steve Belton, if I'm not mistaken. That was under the administration of a gentleman who ultimately got out of town and relocated in Atlanta. But let's be
clear. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, okay.
And I'm just giving the historical context because there seems to be a decline in major funders to the Urban League, and we need to know, is that internal or external? Is it racism? Is it just like, you know, ignore the black sheep or control them with the money? But, I mean, we have all kinds of things going on, and you're exactly right, Mr. Edwards. This was not under Steve Belton or actually Mr. Clarence Hightower's tenure, but it was the guy in between, Mr. Scott Gray, where they lost all the funding from the United Way, basically, for their health programs and things like that. And, of course, the numbers still remain the same. Mr. Belton said the numbers are the same, and the numbers are the same. It hasn't gotten any better. And I think the Democrats here in the state should do a better job of funding people like the Urban League. You can form a think tank, an accountability tank, whatever you need to make sure your money's being processed and used in the right, you know, format if you feel uncomfortable about that. But I remember detailed in 2016 when I went over to state capitol to talk to then the Republican majority, Senator Pratt, Senator Chamberlain, Senator Michelle Benson. Senator Michelle Benson said that, you know what, we give this money away and we never know what happens. You know, we never know the outcomes. And that was the Republican side. And now, you know, I don't know what the Democrats would say because, you know, Senator Champion just signed, Pat pushed through something for $250,000 for artwork in the downtown. And, you know, we still got homeless school children.
I think it was both downtown, wasn't it?
Yes, both downtowns.
Both downtown, Minneapolis and St. Paul.
Yeah. And so, you know, we're just wondering, you know, at what point does the black community, especially these nonprofit agencies, now the Urban League is a flagship agency. And Mr. Edwards, I'm going to have to toot your horn here. The Urban League of Minneapolis, the Minneapolis Urban League, has not seen the success since Mr. Edwards, who was the longest-seated chairman of the board of the Minneapolis Urban League, when they had two schools, North Side, South Side, about 200 employees, God knows how many school children, and actually the schools are doing well. And it's come on a decline, and it's not. I'm not putting it again on Mr. Steve Belton at all whatsoever, but you know, there's a challenge that needs to be addressed. I think, Mr. Edwards, I have a message from Blog Talk Radio, our guest call-in number. You guys can continue to try. They're working on it, 347-426-3904. They're having an overwhelming something or another going on, and people are tying up these different lines, which is affecting our personal line that we pay for every month.
Wow.
So we're going to have to get a free month out of that. Because, you know, that phone line alone is almost $40, you know, to go with this show. And so that's kind of unusual that this is even happening. And I can't, Mr. Edwards, I can't even call you from the switchboard.
I can see that, yeah, I get it clearly. Well, it looks like, you know, probably the NSA or our good friend Vladimir Putin, I should. But anyways, that's unfortunate, but it from other enclaves. A lot of problems electronically, but that does not stop the show. And as I said just a number of minutes ago, when we segue away from this Urban League situation, because what you're saying is that we are not able to get any calls from any supporters or opponents of the Urban League of Minneapolis. And I noticed Mr. Belton talked in terms of the new Urban League structure in the Twin Cities, now known as the Metropolitan Urban League, whatever that means, with offices in both Minneapolis and allegedly St. Paul. So what else we got, Don? I'll give that number. Well, honestly, ain't no sense of giving the number because there's a regular technical problem. Wow.
Yeah. All right,
that'll allow us to stay with breaking story that's coming out of Minneapolis through this program of serious constitutional violation of the rights of an African American who, and by the way, had served 30 years in a federal penitentiary when he was paroled, and was furloughed into the state of Minnesota, which had been his home in the first place, the city of St. Paul, and was then taken into custody by United States Marshals, and when things were all said and done, and I'll be going into greater detail in the second half of today's program, he received 365 months, not 365 years, not 365 months. I definitely, the judge gave him life in prison, so we'll be going into detail, and we will be naming the federal judge and what was a serious, almost criminal conspiracy by the federal court. And I understand specifically, as a long-time activist, the danger of taking on such a powerful institution. But the story of Ralph Mookie Duke, we have an obligation to tell that, and we'll be telling that at the top of the hour. But what else do we have, Don, on this situation? Mr. Flowers, that you talked about. Now, he is a community activist and also a radio talk show host here in the Twin Cities. Is that correct?
That is correct. That is correct. And, I mean, we couldn't get to his full show last week, but we're not trying to pay him back. We just have technical problems. But, yeah, and he had just wrote something, and he had kind of went after State Representative Ray Dean a little bit on the post. And it's not the point that they're not listening to Belton, President Belton of the Minneapolis Urban League or the black community. Well, that is actually the point because they're not listening. But it's like, where do you place your loyalties? You know, we've known for years that, you know, the politician, you know, it's a smile and a promise from both sides, matter of fact. But you have a
the hallmark of this program. And we've already reported prior to this point, that Ray Dean, on the 21st of February of this year, had some way or another not taken the Urban League / Belton / Flowers statute to the revisor's office, and it was not until a meeting at a local church, a telephone conference call, both Ray Dean and a gentleman by the name of Justin Terrell, I think you know Mr. Terrell, we talked about him a couple times, declined to come to the meeting, even though there were two reporters from the Minneapolis Star Tribune, the largest white newspaper here in the state of Minnesota, who were there and heard the discussion, and ultimately Ray Dean, a Democrat representing a heavily black legislative district, finally had to admit that he had lost the proposal. And so I'm detecting, I can only speak for myself and colleagues and associates, but I have detected that there is some hostility. So we want to be fair with regards and transparent that something has gone on. There was a double cross. I mean, I'm going to be very candid. There was a double cross that took place, and both Mr. Belton and Mr. Flowers and others were the head of the. And what again is that name, Don? Because I come out of the era of the Council on Black Minnesota. But what is it called now? the colors, the Negro?
The Council of Minnesota's African Heritage, something like that.
Yeah, that you got it right. That's what it is. So that was a part of what it was, and it smacks. It has a foul smell to it, odor, as we like to say. And maybe next week when the phone lines are working, maybe we will get some calls from supporters of both sides to explain what happened. But there's clearly some friction that is going on. So what I want to do now, Don, is that I want to move into, as we move into the, make sure the time, we move into the last 30 minutes. I have spoken to the family of Ralph Fluky Duke, and they are, if someone will say something about it. So let's go back. Don, 30 years, a little bit better. Ralph Fluky Duke was a drug dealer here in Minnesota. So of course, not unusual. A lot of people deal with dope, drugs, and et cetera, and deal with the community. But anyway, he was arrested, indicted by the authorities at federal grand juries in Central. And consequently, he was sent to prison for at least 40 years at that time for offenses that included drugs and the draft of the court's order indicated also weapons. That the weapons are important for the purpose of the investigative report, but it becomes important. So Mr. Duke, who was a resident of the city of St. Paul, born and raised in the suburb, served 30 years. He was in prison in a federal facility in Illinois, and so that put him in the 7th Judicial District of the Federal District Court, if you will, the 7th, not the 8th. Minnesota is in the 8th District, if you will. Mr. Duke was notified at the Federal Penitentiary in Illinois about a year and a quarter ago, because I have been surprised, Don, and I assume that you did not know about this, so we certainly wouldn't talk about it, that Mr. Duke was told that he had been released. His sentence had been commuted, if you will, and he was being furloughed to his hometown of St. Paul, Minnesota, which put him in the 8th Circuit. If you will, getting him out of the 8th Circuit where he was in the penitentiary. Mr. Duke returned here to another year and a quarter. Did we have somebody calling in? Or what, is that some?
No. It was just some feedback from the phone line.
Okay. So Mr. Duke was returned to the jurisdiction of the what would be the 8th Circuit Court of Appeals and the 8th Circuit and the Federal District of the state of Minnesota, and began to try to reconstruct his life joined his children and grandchildren, etc. A short period of time after he arrived back and had thought he was settling down, a team of United States Marshals arrived at his home, if you will, took him into custody, took him to a county facility here in the surrounding area. He was brought before a judge by the name, and this is where it's going to get sticky, Don. And so it'll be interesting that we hold up, if you will. I'm talking about hold up and not be intimidated, because I have been amazed in the last 48 hours with the number of people who have pretended that though they knew what happened to Mr. Duke, it was not something that warranted concern. And this is the prerogative of each and every citizen under color of law. And so Mr. Duke was held in a county jail here on the outside of the metropolitan area. He appeared before Judge David Dowdy, now retired. If you will, it's like he was retired then, but the retired federal judges who are lifetime appointments continue to preside. Somewhere or another, Judge David Dowdy, diction over the case of a man who had been exonerated or pardoned by the federal court system. He was recharged with weapons maintaining that 30-some years ago that charge of guns in the possession of a felon was not properly adjudicated, and he was then given life. Everything was revoked. He was given life and taken into custody and sent back to the same penitentiary in Illinois that he had been released from under color law. It appears that that was basically the end of it. The Minneapolis Star and Tribune, as we know about, wrote a story about, I guess, 5 months ago. Everybody telling me how they saw the story and the man who had been resentenced, if you will. No one understood the clear fact. There were no attorneys. Mr. Duke's family attempted to obtain legal counsel here in Minnesota. The attorneys were told by somebody not to handle the case. He was given a federal public defender, boy, that was a piece of work, who did nothing to properly adjudicate his appeal, if you will, for reconsideration by Judge Jody. And he was, you know, that's the end of it. What happened was, at some point in time, a member of him being Mr. Duke, if you will, sought him out and informed him that he had been for 30 years, I don't think about it, but had been the target of a retaliation and revenge being orchestrated inside of the federal court. That's frightening. That's scary, because we all like to think that, you know, we can always turn to the federal court, even more so than the state court, or judicial and constitutional, and I should repeat that again, for judicial and constitutional relief. What was found out, and what now is being confirmed, is that Judge Doty, whose wife, now deceased, and I mean, I go with this because I know how they, you know, the boys try to get to you, if you will, and take advantage of those pressures. The judge's wife has since died. The woman who was the mother of a young lady that Judge Doty indicated that Mr. Duke had made into a heroin addict, if you will. But that wasn't what he was resentenced on. He was resentenced on the fact that 30 years ago that they forgot to charge him. I mean, really, I have to say it like that, Don, that they forgot to charge him with the gun charge, if you will. And so now this judge, retired but acting under color law, sentenced him for the remainder of his life back in the penitentiary. And it was not properly handled on a civilized, if you will. He's in his 80s, if you will. Questions have been posed in the last 48 hours if there was anyone on the Civil Rights Committee, particularly in St. Paul, who were committed, concerned about the constitutional violations that were imposed on Mr. Duke. Leadership in St. Paul said, well, you know, you're fooling with dope. Now, some of the people that were saying this themselves are involved with drugs.
Well, yeah.
And I think you know some of them now. You know some of what we're talking about. But at this point, we're going to wait and see if anybody next week will pick up the phone and give us a call back about the silence from the civil rights community in the state of Minnesota on what happened to Mr. Duke, because everything that was done to him was a violation of the Constitution and a violation of his right to due process and et cetera. And so we have been asked by the loved ones and families of Mr. Duke, and it's something that certainly I will always do, is at least his story to be told, because it is chilling. I use that term, Mr. Allen, it is chilling to see a federal judge, sitting or retired, doubt his authority and power and have that kind sure that Mr. Duke will ever get out of the country. He's now in his early 70s. If he will, we had a chance to talk with him yesterday from the federal penitentiary in Beckett, Illinois, if you will. He's a man I knew for many, many years, many, many in our community know him. He was a man that fell upon difficult times, but he's also a man that did a lot of things for his community, if you will. We'll go into that at some future point in time. But anyway, in the case of Ralph Brooky Duke, a retired federal judge, so acting under color of the statutes and et cetera, revoked everything that a court of the Seventh Circuit had restored to him, took him into custody in the dead of the night, if you will, dropped 365 months on him, with, you know, at the end of his life. And we now find out, I'm obligated to say this, we now find out that there was great animus and bias against Mr. Duke, not only by the judge, and it happened to be that the person whose daughter allegedly, quote-unquote, was turned into a heroin addict by Mr. Duke, that woman, young woman, parents lived next door. They were neighbors. Because the good judge and his wife, late wife, want to be respectful, that they were all neighbors, and that they had sat down. This is information that came from another member of the family, and they made a decision that this Negro would spend the rest of his life, no matter what the circumstances it were, as pertains to violating his what constitutional rights he had, that he would spend the rest of his life in a federal penitentiary. And so we're just passing that on. That's for all of the folks that look the other way, particularly in this state, if you will. You raised the question early on in this morning's program about what happened out there with Omar and Reeves and et cetera. And I guess it just as an indication of just how fragile our rights are. God, your rights, my rights, your children's rights, if you will, your wife's rights, all of my relatives and et cetera. That, man, if you're black, you really ain't got no rights. Any questions, Don? Do you have any questions? I imagine is there anybody in the queue, by the way?
We still have a few people in the queue, but I cannot even click on it. It's not letting me. I see the phone thing lit up, and I can't click on anybody. And I apologize about that. We'll get this fixed by next Saturday. Apologize. But, yeah, I can't click on them. But, yeah, I do have a question, Mr. Edwards. Is this not considered in some way, shape, or form double jeopardy?
Don, that conversation took place over the last 48 hours with myself and representatives of the Ralph Brookie's family. Certainly it does. I looked at the law book. It represents double jeopardy, but let's be very candid, Don. Let's be up front. When the Minneapolis Star Tribune decided to write the story about a Negro who had his parole violated and had been sentenced back to life in prison, in a federal prison, the Star Tribune and constitutionalists, in other words, people who practice constitutional law and everything else, and be they Republicans or Democrats or Republicans, knew that there was a violation of the due process and key question that you asked, equal protection under the law. People knew that, but I have to apologize to the listening audience of this program this morning because it was not on top of what had happened to Mr. Duke, because I was like most naive people, and I really don't consider myself to be a naive person, but you just expect. But then I should remember that we're operating under the auspices of the Trump administration. I mean, I understand that, but I just assumed that once it became known within the civil rights community of the state of Minnesota what had happened to Mr. Duke, that we would see our leaders, if you will, some who were over at the state capitol asking for more money to do whatever it is that they need to do, that they would rally. They would step up. There would be press conferences and et cetera to speak to the important, irrespective of what a man's crimes may have been. And I repeat again, technically under the law, and that's another part of the statute of the United States of America, and that is harsh and unconstitutional punishment, if you will. And I just assumed, and not really, the black man who has been out here as long as I have should never assume anything. I just assumed that civil rights leadership would come together and would organize, just like they organized for Omar, to have the right of freedom of speech, if you will, of dealing with Barack Obama and anybody else. But I was gravely mistaken, Mr. Allen. I was gravely mistaken because what black leaders did is say, hey, man, that's too bad. Better him than me, kind of thing. And I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
So it's kind of scary. It kind of makes you remember the days of Germany, of Stalin's Soviet Russia, if you will, and other totalitarian nations and et cetera, that, man, you a person of color, boy, you ain't got no rights whatsoever to do whatever you want to do. I repeat again, a retired federal judge brings him back into Minnesota, even though they made sure that he would be reassigned back to Minnesota. As soon as he got here, they waited, like I said, maybe a couple weeks, and federal marshal took him into custody, and that judge turned around and said, no, boy. Said, that was all a mistake. Said, you were not held accountable for an action 30 years ago. By the way, John, I'm trying to ask the question on the statute of limitation, which the white court, lets us know that there's statute of limitations. You're really seeing that now in the Russia investigation, et cetera, that the statute of limitations had run out. Judge said, don't make no difference. That we, I talked with my friends and neighbors. That's what they're old with. But I talked to my friends and neighbors, and they want this Negro to die in a federal penitentiary. And, of course, with him in his early 70s, his life expectancy, come on, Don, So to your question, though, from a legal perspective, in all aspects, double jeopardy, denial of due process, and the central was all in play. And see, the white paper here actually tested the water to see what the intestinal fortitude of the civil rights community in Minnesota was and is, particularly in the black community. By writing the story, I had an associate tell me a couple of days ago, said, well, but that happened a year ago when they revoked and reestablished the doctrine of punishment and sent him back to the penitentiary. And I thought, wow.
Yeah.
So there is no forgiveness on the color ball. What other questions, Don?
Well, I'm just looking here because since you said that, I had to dig deep on the internet here. So they're violating his Fifth Amendment to the Constitution, which states no person shall be subject for the same offense to be twice put in jeopardy of life or limb. The double jeopardy clause bars second prosecutions after either an acquittal or a conviction and prohibits multiple punishments for the same offense.
And that's actually what his federal public defender should have argued, and any good lawyer here in private practice, and particularly civil rights, which NAACP would toss in terms of its heavy legal knowledge and et cetera. You read the right language, Mr. Allen. You found the right language. That is the genesis of any action that that Judge Tony took in the violation and the resentencing to life in prison, where he will die, unfortunately, Mr. Duke. You're absolutely right. Excellent. I'm finding the different.
Wow.
But civil rights leaders, I'm aware now, the last 48 hours, on finalizing this investigation, identifying people that do, and turned to look the other way, is that they knew that, too. I mean, the leadership, well-funded organizations, and et cetera, knew. But I guess the contention is that he was just a single individual. But you see, on the other hand, that's the reason that we got this problem out here, Don, at the last minute. So we didn't even get a chance to talk about the gun battle and the deaths there on 7th Street.
Oh, no.
North Minneapolis, this past Sunday. It's one of the this all starts to do is the damn thing. We had some American women shot, found shot in front of the Urban League of Minneapolis, allegedly, a couple weeks ago. Don, I think we touched on that.
Mm-hmm.
Come to find out, again, an investigation of my special unit, if you will, we find out that the two women were shot in a house 8 blocks away from the Urban League and on 10th Avenue. I will not at this point get the address of the home. Everybody will know who it is and whose house it was and et cetera. But they were shot, put in one of the young lady's car, wounded, bleeding. It, in fact, there was a blood trail in the backyard from the back door to obviously where a car would have been parked. They were then taken. Somebody obviously drove the car. They were then taken to the site there at U-Rock and across the street from the Urban League and 50 yards away from the 4th Precinct. Do you know, Donald Allen, that the public information officer knew that he was providing false information to the media? Do you know initially until confronted by yours truly yesterday that the Star Tribune knew that they were giving false information but went ahead and reported it as if the two women had been gunned down while driving down Plymouth Avenue?
Mm.
So we've got that out there also, and of course, hopefully our technical problems will be dealt with and satisfied next week. You know, hopefully people have got it down. And any questions they want to pose. But that is also dangerous. When you have that kind of violent conduct and effect going on, and the authorities and some segments, hopefully, it'll never be the Don and Ron program, are in on the cover-up. And I repeat again, the two women were shot in a house about 8 blocks away. They were taken to the site that was later reported in the Minneapolis, the paper now. The Star Tribune tried to tell me yesterday that reporter Jamie, who did not write the original story, had written a corrective story. That is not true. That is not true. The Star Tribune did not correct that shooting. And the injuries, the wounding, actually, of the two African-American women, which, by the way, Don, as we wrap up, led to the gun battle and the death of one African-American and the critical wounding of another on West 7th Street at approximately 2:05 Central Standard Time last Sunday. It is scary, brother, in this town. It is really scary about what is happening. And this comes at a time when Sasha Cotton, who is head of the GBI, the Gang Violence Initiative Program, is talking in terms of giving more money so that, quote unquote, her team can continue to regularly work the streets of Minneapolis and particularly North Minneapolis. These are dangerous times. You know, in closing on this end, Don, you know, black children, black babies go to sleep in Minneapolis listening to gunfire and they wake up. Do you know, man, that one day last week, I'm not going to give the date. I want somebody to challenge us. That one day last week in our city, in Minneapolis, Minnesota, that over 100 shots were fired and picked up on the shot spotter.
Mm.
And there was an incident 3 days ago in which gunmen fired 60 shots in exchange for gunfire. And yesterday, in closing, we had a gun battle just a block and a half away from the 4th Precinct in which people, cars, and houses were shot up right along 11th and 10th and Morgan in Minneapolis. That's for all the naysayers that say that everything is okay, that we're working, and people such as, well, Bill Reeves and others who maintain that they speak for the community. That's what it's like in your community, Don.
Okay, we have about 12 seconds left. We'd like to thank everybody for listening to the show.
Well, can we hear James Brown?
Yeah, right here.